Take it from there. Beautiful. I actually don't know if we're missing anybody else. Let me see. Wait. We are. I just give a couple of more minutes. Maybe in the spirit of my dentist appointment today that shot me out because I was there at 4:06 instead of 4 o'clock or 4:20. Wait, 4:20. I was there at 4:26 and they rescheduled me. So I shall not pass on to others the feeling of 6 minutes late. You are late. Perfect. Awesome. Yeah, that's perfect, Carrie. Thank you so much for letting us know. Totally cool. However it works for you. If it does work to turn off your screen, put your headphones on and just listen, feel free to do what works for you and what makes sense for you. Yeah, let me just wait another second and then we will introduce ourselves. I mean, the purple lipstick is not bad. The only thing is that, like, I also have green and they look great. And then sometimes I look like right now, I almost thought that I was dehydrated or I'm like, wait, why are my lips that cold? Am I cold?
Just before you brought it up, I was going to come off mute to say that the purple was great. So, but purple is funny like that.
Uh-huh. So is the green. I'm like, oh, I love the green. It's Fenty. And I'm like, this is sexy green. I put it on and it highlights the green veins in my face. And I'm like, son of a. Oh God. All right. It's 7:05 and let's begin. I want to open up the space for the welcoming of our amazing ancestors and spirit guides and all the resources and relationships and relatives in this like world that we inhabit and in this moment that we're inhabiting. We also welcome the wisdom that's gonna come right through. And I'm so grateful for that. I am living by the Susquehannock River and this is the land of the Susquehannock tribe folks. And it's Columbia, Pennsylvania. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm so excited about our chat today. It's gonna be the shit. And so what I'm gonna do is, Joe, I'm gonna ask you to introduce yourself and say what feels like yummy for you to name at this moment. Joe is not only like family to me or family, I don't even know what the like is, it's family. Family to me, a beloved priestess. And you do so much amazing goodness, Joe. And we're sharing you with the world. That's a little scary sometimes. No, I don't want to share you. No sharing. That's it. I take my friend back. That's it. But yeah, if you can introduce yourself, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm Joe Kent Katz. And I am currently, I use she, her pronouns, and I'm currently on Pecumtuck, Nonotuck, Nipmuc land in Western Massachusetts, Northampton. Mm-hmm. I just want to love you up, yeah. I feel like, yeah, I was saying before, I'm not on social media very much, but I was like, but it's yeah. So, and we're just going to talk about stuff. And that is like one of my favorite things to do.
Yeah.
To do that with other people, just getting to be part of it, that sounds delicious. So, thank you for asking. And I'm glad to be here. And I often like to, when we're talking about topics that we're going to be talking about, I like to share a little piece about my name to start. And I grew up with the name Joanna Michelle Kent, with these blue eyes and this light skin and this straight hair, and passed as a white Christian girl, just like almost every single person around me growing up. And my dad grew up with the last name Katz, and his father, my grandfather, my Zadie Charlie Katz, wanted to open a drugstore in Toronto in the late 50s. And he decided that in order to do that, he needed to change his name from a Jewish name to a white name, in order to get any business, because the texture of anti-Semitism at the time would have not allotted him business in the part of town he could afford to open his store in, but also would have invited all sorts of physical violence. And he was like, "We're not doing that. I've got my family to take care of." So he borrowed some money and went to the local, I don't know, state town establishment and signed a form, literally stroke of the hand, and became a white man, and opened a store called Kent Drugs, which became actually the first drug store, chain drug store in Toronto.
Mm.
Around the same time, my other grandfather, who grew up with the name Elitovich, which was changed to Litovitz, he changed his name, also opening a business. So he changed it from Litovitz to Lang. So both of my parents met James Carl Kent and Patricia Lang, which is like, wow. White, whitey, white, 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 some white on top. Both Ashkenazi Jews all the way back. And so I just like to share that because I feel like it's important to recognize me, I'm saying what land I'm on, but I'm also saying something about how I insert myself into this place, onto this land. And that was with a huge personal in my family line contribution and participation in the assimilation project. That's part of how I arrive.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
I feel like so in even starting this conversation, for me, it was about I've dedicated this series and a lot of my learning to my mom and her beingness. And to be able to notice where our traditions and where all these little things that to some maybe just like, oh, this is what we do, are actually this fucking mind-blowing, handed down from generation to generation way of being in the world that hasn't particularly been colonized. So when you light Shabbat candles and when you're doing this, that, and the other with these traditions are coming from way back. Right. And so we know that if it's your custom to do Sephardic ritual or Ashkenazi ritual or Mizrahi ritual, those things are, they're the nuance of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But there's still something handed down from the past. And because I've been on the thing of studying decolonization, it happened very quickly when I noticed that Judaism had some secrets. And we're not just talking Kabbalistic, right? There's some secrets that it has because it's managed to maintain a lot of its root traditions, right? And relationship things that come from earth-based movement. So it's we go out searching everywhere for particular answers, but the answers in our lineages are actually mad, amazing medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of being able to say, let's talk about decolonizing as a Shuva, because wherever we all have gone in this turtle island, we need to recollect ourselves. We need to return and find the beauty in why we do something as simple as Kiddush. And it's not to push that, because you could use orange. Who cares what juice you use? Do you know, it's like being... Yeah, it's just if it's juice and a plastic cup and you're like, thank you goddess or however you connect to the divine, that is badass for a group of people who've been traveling past the desert into all the other lands, marrying and generations going, that's mind-blowing. It is actually mind-blowing. And so I wanted us to have some space to kind of have this conversation in certain pieces, but that will continue to weave together. So today, talking about Joe. So good. You know, transcending Jewish trauma for folks racialized as white, assimilated into that white racial construct that this particular day-to-day life we live in. And so if we can talk about the trauma and the feeling and the stuff that comes up that becomes an obstacle to our most authentic expression, then to me, that's powerful. It's powerful to know, oh, the reason why I respond in this way or react in this way is because this is what's going on. And so I wanted us to have some time to talk about kind of the contrast of what becomes the work when we decide to become, you know, advocates or active in our communities. Also naming the complexity of identities, mm-hmm. and you are all the things mm-hmm. that you name yourself to be and you come from. Right. And so, like, to me, having this, being able to talk about trauma, especially, which helps us shift kind of the way a conversation can just stay on the surface. Mm-hmm. Right. And that this support, the roles that we work in or we move in this type of time and generation may be distinctly different, even for you and I, Joe, you know, like what that looks like. And we both do like anti-racism trainings and things like that and teachings. And so it's like this idea of saying we're siblings mm-hmm. for the rest of our days and every lifetime, right? Like big love. Yeah. And we also have the nuances of our experiences as Jews to kind of cross and arrive to a place where we can even talk about it.
Right.
And so I'm excited for that. And I'm also excited for y'all to go ahead after this, head to Joe's website and download the map that we're going to talk some about tonight. It's beautiful. And it's transcendingjewishtrauma.com.
Transcendingjewishtrauma.com. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. When I send out the recording, I can send out a link if you can't find it any other way. But I'd love, Joe, if you can talk about what was it like for you to step into creating the map and kind of taking this on as work in the world. Where did that come from for you?
Yeah, great. I'm glad you're giving me some prompts because I'm just like, you know what happens. I can just... Yeah. And then I can just like go down rabbit hole. No.
Back here. Words.
Right here. Yeah. So the map, I like spent a lot of time on the page on that website where I talk about where this work comes from, because it feels very important to be honoring the legacy of a lot of women, actually. I'm just realizing that now. It's mostly women that I'm naming and queers. Whose work this, like whose shoulders I'm standing on when I kind of put this together. Sherry Brown is a name that needs to be spoken. She's an elder Ashkenazi, white Ashkenazi Jew who's been doing healing work in Jewish community for I think as long as I've been alive.
Mm.
Not quite, but I'm 43. We're, you know, same age. So I think close to that long, just kind of engaged with hundreds and hundreds of Jews who are also reaching for liberation and holding the complexities around lots of different identities and growing as her people grow in our own understanding and our nuance and as kind of tides change politically. And anyway, a lot of the language and kind of the way that the map is organized comes from her.
Mm,
beautiful. And it felt like my contribution was really taking those ideas and putting them, really kind of putting them into a way that I learn, which I need to, I'm one of those people that needs to see it and hear it and say it back to you all at the same time in order to learn. Mm-hmm. And so there was something to me helpful about being like, I just need to see this. Like we're talking about so many layers of trauma and so many different nuances of the way that our physical bodies and our emotional bodies and our spiritual bodies are shaped. And I need to just be able to look at it and see what we're working with. And I think that some of that is like myself as a healer. Some of that is myself as a educator. Like I need to see the big picture so I can address the tiny pieces, like how we're all kind of manifestors of these larger systems. So I had been doing anti-oppression workshops, mostly anti-racism workshops in Jewish community for like, I think close to a decade before I started talking about anti-Semitism, which I understood as evidence of my own internalized anti-Semitism that I really believed. Mm-hmm. And I really kind of swallowed this idea that if I were to think about my own experience of being oppressed, my own people's experience of being oppressed in that way, I think specifically because I'm thinking about white Jews, that was me and my crew taking attention away from what's actually important, which was the dismantling of racism. That's bottom line for me. That's like, I can feel that. It's the bottom line for me. What I didn't understand, and I had no concept of, is that racism and anti-Semitism are interlinked, interwoven, completely dependent on one another, fuel for each other, stemming from the same sources, stemming from the same history, energetically as well as politically, in so many different ways. But I didn't know this, and we, the people that like brought me up, the other white folks that brought me into understanding how to think about racism and myself in that role of a oppressor role, we didn't have the complexities. And I also think that there was a lot of anti-Semitism where I was being brought up in that way. And I also think that there was a huge like scarcity energy running. So if we were to say, like, maybe take an afternoon and talk about being Jews, that literally afternoon was a leech on the energy that needed to be going in a certain direction. And I feel like it's a gift of so many organizers and activists and educators and healers over the last few decades that have really, led by POC, by women in particular, who have like centered this understanding about interconnectivity and intersectionality and like, let's not get away any longer with deciding that one identity or one individual or one oppression is more significant or separate from the rest.
Right.
There's something about like the internalized anti-Semitism and all of the whiteness and trying to unlearn the whiteness that really made it like a stuck place for me to think about talking about being a Jew. Mm-hmm. And when I chose to start talking about it, what I realized was I'm getting chills when I say this, because that was like, it felt like it was actually the unlocking that I needed. And that I was teaching needed. And everybody I was teaching at the time was like a lot of young adult, mostly white, mostly Ashkenazi Jews who had in them like an openness and a desire to be undoing the ways that they were playing the oppressor role. And were also scared to think about how it was that they could be Jews in that way that was just made it really complicated. And it's really hard to think about these things that are really complicated, especially when, as a white person, you finally get to the place where you're like, okay, I get it. I'm racist. I get it. There's no denying it. There's no point in denying it. I'm not wasting my time. That's true. This is the air that I breathe. This is the water that I swim in. It's just true. It is in my cells. I'm not going to try and deny it anymore. I'm just going to notice when it happens and work to undo it consistently. That's life work.
Right.
You get that on some level, and then all of a sudden, like, hey, also some of that stuff is in place because you've got all this internalized anti-Semitism. It's like, you know what? Can I just eat my dinner and go to sleep? I can't. It's actually just too heavy, especially because addressing the internalized anti-Semitism requires talking about trauma. It requires.
Right.
And same with racism though. Like, we can't undo it just with our minds and just understanding it and explaining it up here. We have to drop it down.
Right.
And that's the decolonization part, right? It's like actually untraining yourself, training yourself out of those ways that we've been confined. And in terms of anti-Semitism, it's like part of anti-Semitism is like the pillar that there is no anti-Semitism.
Right.
That's part of the thing that is anti-Semitism is the denial of anti-Semitism, not just out there, not just Holocaust deniers, but like inside of us. And what that does is so many things. One thing that that does is like allow the individualism of whiteness to maintain.
Right.
So if I'm having a problem here, if I don't feel like I fit in here, if this doesn't work for me here, if I don't understand what's going on here, it's me.
Right.
It's me. It's not just that there's anti-Semitism that's running through this like white shell, making it look like everyone should be able to participate. No one should be depressed. No one should be anxious. In fact, get out of here with that like quick talking and get out of here with those hands moving. You see my, I'm like, I, you know, I'm not going to put them down. Here we go. I have my whole little on my face. So rather than it being an issue of anti-Semitism and really an issue of white supremacy and Christian hegemony, no, it's actually you. It's actually you. You are just, you're having a hard time. You can't make this work for you. So go over there. So all that is to say is that when I did start, like, I want to say like kind of timidly, but really it was courageously starting to talk about this stuff.
Yeah.
In these spaces, I felt like all of a sudden we were doing healing work. And we weren't just learning to understand with our mind. We were actually doing the undoing. And it was profound. And I saw people actually start to shift, not just around understanding anti-Semitism, but around white people understanding in a different way how they were perpetuating racism. Like, that's what I felt like people were harnessing, the capacity to really feel that. And that was dependent on being able to understand, like, oh, I'm carrying trauma too. Of course you are. But to have it identified, to have it like named, to be able to talk about it, to be able to share about it, what are some of the experiences that you're carrying ancestrally, and what does it look like in your body now? Getting to connect about that, getting to like shed light on that, allowed us to be like, okay, this is really happening. And while we're undoing this, we're also undoing some of the ways that we're so committed unconsciously to whiteness, to racism, to perpetuating those things.
Yeah.
So once I made this map originally, I made it on this like big, there's a picture of it on the website. It's like a big light blue bed sheet, like a queen size bed sheet. And I would just fold it up and take it out and put tacks on the wall. And it was really big. And I wanted it to be big because I was like, this shit is big. And we actually have to be overwhelmed by it because it's overwhelming. Like, you need to see the fullness of it. And people would be like, do you have this on the PDF? And I was like, if I did, I wouldn't bring this bed sheet around, would I? Or just tangible, you know. But what I saw was people would walk away from that part of a workshop that I did or that workshop and be like, oh, okay, things are different now.
Right.
I'm different now. I'm seeing something that I did not see before, and you can't unsee it, and here I go. And that was like, I felt people like kind of just take a deep dive there and be like, I'm in.
Right.
So
right.
I felt like this at some point needs to be out there. So people can really work with it and see it and dive in.
Word.
And so if we can see it here, I can put in
beautiful. Great question.
Also, honestly, I'm amazed that there are only 4 participants. Right there is telling something.
Yeah.
That's huge. If this was around being anti-racist, you would have 30 people. I mean, you know, I think it is that fear of talking about anti-Semitism and our own internalized anti-Semitism.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of really struck by this. Because when I saw it, I was like, okay, how can I make it here? Like, I signed up to get the recording, you know, because life is very complicated right now, and I hope I don't have to get off. But I was just like, this is amazing. Oh my God, this is so profound. This is so powerful. And there's 4 participants.
Yeah.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah. And I think we're to say that so many people are in a state of reactiveness and reaction would be an understatement of what our time and our generations are actually experiencing. And it, to me, what amazes me about it is the way that one can create so much space from a thing that you see it from, you think it's an outside thing, yeah. Right? And so like if I focused on anti-racism work, so for me, even as a person of color, I'm constantly negotiating and looking between the lines and trying to see where is it that bringing medicine would be most powerful, or like what is the thing needed in a big way. And I feel like there are ways where with all the chaos, it is easier to be the hero of the, I put the Black Matters, you know, Black Lives Matters on my social media. I've done it. This is not, rather than really sitting down and saying, right, I want to do good in the world and I see how good can be done in the world, but that I'm doing charity, a form of tzedakah out there without ever having addressed what allows that kind of dissonance or that disembodiment to happen where anti-Semitism is not addressed. And that, like, that's the, like, I'm okay. No, we're not okay. Anytime we hear some news, we're like sharing like another shooting in this place, another thing in that place. And as if, and fascinating, as if silencing that.
Yeah.
Makes anyone for that matter much more intellectual, logical, right. Productive, calm, right? Like if we just do the stuff out there and never have to deal with our own stuff, I mean, it would be great. Like we could keep on living, keep on walking without accountability or without a possibility for something different. So being able to read like into these spaces where we're like, oh no, actually I know displacement. Just like someone in this time and generation knows displacement, except there's a cost for looking the illusion of seeming stable, secure, and okay that I get to sow into. Because I don't ever want to look at the fact that at any point in time, you know, the trauma runs through. At any point in time, I'm terrified that they're going to come knocking on my door. Right? But we're not going to talk about, that's going to be a secret thing we talk about. And to me, there's a lot of challenge with that because it doesn't allow us to really get to the bottom. Oh shit. It just knocked her off.
I mean, what she said about, you know, I mean, I do a lot of work, anti-racism work, and I've been doing it for, you know, since I was like 15.
Yeah.
But I haven't done anti-Semitism work.
Right. Right.
Like, cause what she said, taking time to do that, it's like, you know, that's not the work.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's where, it, to me, it's so important to be able to name, man, I hope she can get back on. To be able, but I think she will win it. To be able to name all these pieces, because in order to understand, not, and understand is a tricky word anyways. And, you know, but to have a depth, let me hold on.
Hi.
Hey. I did notice, I was like, wait. It's gone.
That was wild. Okay, I'm back.
Okay.
That was something just happened weird. Okay.
Yeah. Seemed like a little pause. But so talking about these things allows us to get to the bottom of it. And as a Jew of color, it's a different relationship and a different responsibility and a different intersection that I live in, right? Both the work of like reclamation in my own family lineage, along with like what it's going to look like to be me in this particular context. And so in the distinctions, there is this thing that we can say, we need to start observing the root of why I can do tzedakah, but I can't sit and actually have a conversation about how I feel terrified and have patterned and manifested a life in which I'm constantly curating so that I don't have to remember that somebody might turn around and do harm to me. Right? Like, that's like, if I don't, like, let me not, actually, we're not going to talk about that, right? Three Twix later, Snickers bars later, you know, we're not going to talk about that. And yet everything inside is what creates this really, it's like a thin veil of reasons why you stay where you're at, reasons why you don't touch a thing.
Right.
And for me, there's this like this, no, wait a minute. If you know displacement in your DNA, if you know rejection in your DNA, that the idea that you and your body are unacceptable and somebody considers it trash, then it is, there's no question about why we would be fighting for Black lives to matter. Mm-hmm. There would be no question as to why any of the isms we're out there deconstructing and dismantling, not just in a linguistic pattern, not just in the knowing of the mind, but literally in our own embodiment, we're peeling back the layers, right? And respecting the boundaries that we may not understand another thing because it's not our lived experience, but there's this thing that we do know of.
Mm-hmm.
And life is worth fighting for,
mm-hmm.
Right? And so like, to me, if we can't get these things in the conversations with Ashkenazi Jews, and then having also a different type of conversation with JOC that helps us heal up, if you will, I'm in transition with that language, but it allows us to integrate the pieces rather than ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And like that, to me, that's the medicine. It's the capacity built for integrating.
Yeah.
All the experiences and being able to say, oh, okay, this is what we're going to show up and do. This right. is how we're going to be in the world.
Right.
Because we've been living with the idea of not being here for so long.
Right.
That we've run from place to place, right? And that's what makes up for our complexity. We run from place to place.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so like the thing I try to explain to people is here you are. To nourish and care for yourself allows you to build the capacity to be present for the bigger thing,
mm-hmm.
rather than skipping over yourself. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want anyone to bring any other medicine than the medicine that is in alignment with mm-hmm. who they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's needed. We need that.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, it's like, we can't go anywhere else. But if you don't start asking the questions, wait, why am I like this? Why is my response like this?
Right.
What is so uncomfortable? And, you know, sitting in rooms with, you know, white Jews is like, what is so uncomfortable with dealing with the fact that it was easy for you to insert yourself into a structure, into the greater project? And while your generations did that for safety, now we can wake up and talk about this.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we don't have to hide this anymore. Yeah. Right. And this would be a very similarly placed conversation with light-skinned folk and you know, the various groups of cultures and peoples, right? Like, I need to be able to know that the sun, it looked like the sun shone on me greatly because it was just a natural thing. No, it was because my skin was much more palatable.
Mm-hmm.
So it was easy to let me in because it's mm-hmm. palatable. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? I don't look at myself and go, oh my God, I hate my skin. Damn light Puerto Ricans. Like that, you know, those things. I'm not doing that. I'm going, oh, actually the structure was created to do that thing.
Right.
And the way I get to be in relationship with that is in my living and not just in my words.
Mm-hmm.
So when I show up for a training, I'm not showing up for a training, crossing all the T's and dotting the I's. Because the fucking work is decolonial work.
Yes. Right.
Right?
Yes.
And so to me, this is why this is so important to have a conversation about, right? Because, well, one, you and I have had so many conversations about this stuff. right? So it's like the yummy stuff, right? It's like we've been talking about it.
Yeah.
And even with all the ways our work can move, we're also recognizing that there's work to be done in the sitting and being with our communities and saying, hey, what's good? What's up? Where are you at?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you not? And we need to talk about it and need to talk about that the experience for a Jew of color may be significantly, not maybe, is significantly different than the white Jewish experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I find that some ways, if we're not talking about the traumatic epigenetic impact, right? Like if we're not talking about that long-term, there won't be any space to do the work that needs to be done.
Right.
Right. And we need the space. And that's where to me is like, if we do that, if we can get thinking about how we're thinking, we have an opportunity to change this for the generations to come.
Yeah.
Right.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah. Of course.
So there's a moment in white-skinned Jews' history where ancestors chose to designate themselves as white. And the society accepted that and colluded with it. So if we went to that moment, that energetically, is that the place that you would want to decolonize, that moment?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, Joe, do you want to touch on that?
Yeah. So I kind of wish my sister was here right now because she's really good about the history and she could be like, here's how it lays out. And I'm grateful for that. But I think that I think there are a lot of choice points along the way. And I don't know that it was that we, you know, Ashkenazi Jews from Eastern Europe decided we're white and then the system agreed. I think there was a lot of pulling for safety in different ways, mm-hmm. pulling for resources in different ways. And we were definitely part of the waves of the like more modern like white construct, because at the time there were lots of different groups, Irish, for instance, mm-hmm. who were like becoming white, and the becoming white was not like, okay, fine, we'll let you guys in. It was like for the purpose of creating a system that was privileging one group over another, period. There right. was no like, oh yeah, you Jews, we like you enough, we'll let you in. You know, it was specifically to create and to perpetuate the power dynamics that were maintaining wealth.
Right.
So, and I think that there was a lot of choice points that Jews were making that, like what you just said, Deborah, like had us colluding with, allowed us to sneak in the cracks of, and then actually had us be taking leadership in perpetuating some of those systems. Like I'm thinking about from my own family, my grandmother's family was from Poland and my grandfather, Belarus and Russia. And my grandparents met in an orphanage mm-hmm. on the Upper West Side in New York.
Wow.
To say New York, if you say Upper West Side, is it obvious to everybody? Anyway, they met in called the Hebrew Orphan Asylum. Mm-hmm. And that institution was set up by German Jews who had come over with some resource, who had been already participating in this whiteness game, who had been in some ways let in. And once there was this larger influx of all these Russian and Romanian Jews who were not as assimilated from the get and then came over without wealth, struggling because of anti-Semitism, and struggling here because of anti-Semitism, this institution was set up to assimilate some of these Russian Romanian Jews, because if there's too much of them, they're going to bring down our already like established whiteness status that the German Jews had already created, who had already like found, aspired to, maintained, allowed, which was completely flimsy. You know, this was all a complete construction to create a sense of whiteness, to block out some people and privilege other people, to protect wealth. So again, this was not like, oh, there was no camaraderie. There was no solidarity. This was just about a system. So I'm saying that because this was like, for me, this was the example in my family of how whiteness was taught directly, like to children. Like, we are bringing you into whiteness. We're taking the Jewy out of you, and we're bringing more whiteness in for the sake of whitening this Jewish community so that we can keep marching along and get closer and closer to this promised exception of being included in the privileged group. And this moment was happening all over the place in all sorts of different ways, where there was like, you know, people being let in or not let in. I mean, I'm thinking like one generation later, my mom, every day on her way to school, walks by a sign at a country club that says no dogs or Jews allowed. So, you know, and then by the time I'm walking on that street, there is no sign. That sign's gone. So there's like a moving in, which could be perceived, and for a lot of us white Jews, perceived as like, this is us getting safer and safer and safer, closer and closer to power. But it's completely a construction, right? So we're just participating. We're just pawns, but we're also pawns that are deeply benefiting on some level by being allowed in. So this makes me think about, one of what you just said about like that other choice point that happens individually and also happens collectively, where we're any group, we're in like a safety survival moment, either because this is actually what's happening. There's a moment where we are like actually needing to grab on for safety, or because we're in a moment where our own trauma around safety and survival is being triggered. So we think that this is a make it or break it moment.
Right.
And right. We make a choice. We make a choice either to move towards solidarity with other groups that are targeted by oppression, because that solidarity means safety, or we move towards more of that denial, more of that perpetuation, more of that leaning into the system. Which takes us further away from other groups that are also being, you know, hit over and over again by these waves of oppression. And because of this concept of whiteness that so many Jews, Ashkenazi Jews, have like come up inside of, it's so easy to choose the system.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is because of the way that we've internalized white superiority. We've internalized white culture. That allows us to see that as the go-to, rather than see like all of the people who are struggling together, be like, oh, these are my people. Rather than that, I'm steered towards this individualization, where me and maybe my family are going to make it, and we're going to survive, and work. And that's total whiteness. That's whiteness.
Right.
And yeah. And because of the way that history worked, and because of the role of my Ashkenazi white siblings in it, this was what we were taught, part of that survival choice. That's part of us embracing whiteness, because the more we make that choice, the more we perpetuate that system.
Right, right. And sometimes what I find, to me, what I find fascinating is how disconnected we are from seeing our patterns and our reactions as something that's linked deeply inside ourselves.
Right.
Right. And that wherever we're coming from, the minute something gets close to those wounds of origin or lineage, then the immediate, I need to make sure we're safe. I can't make sure anybody else is safe. I got to make sure we're safe, because we're living with that threat. Right. And so like, here, I'm going to move in the world. First of all, I'm going to make sure that I'm always smiling, because God is forbid you don't look happy. I'm going to move through the world, making it so that I'm okay. Yes, I get shit's happening, but I'm okay when you're really actually not okay. And like the four locks you have on your door are a sign of, right, fill in the blank. The way you share parts of yourself or not are signs of fill in the blank, right? So like you can be like, oh, I'm a, like, let's say if we said I'm an educator, but I would never talk to you about my Jewish roots. But I'm an educator. Right. Just look at me in that concept. Like, look at me there. Not all this other stuff, because I don't even know what it means anymore to be this thing. All I know is that there is fear and that I live my life, like, right? And your, like, lower energy centers constantly activated because you're afraid. Right. But it's been so normalized and neuroticized, which is, it's a good word. It sounds good saying it. I don't know if it's real, but I'm okay. I just made it real.
It sounds good.
That's great.
Right, but there, but so there's that thing of building relationship in that way, right? And so, to me, if we can, if we become more aware, we have more of these conversations, we begin to unearth more all the patterns, the way it shapes and moves, and to understand that that underlying pattern, on top of it, almost like a screen, is are the structures of oppression, right? And most people want to be like, so if we use an education as an example, we can say you need to get educated so that you can make sure you have a job. You know, we say all the things. It sounds really great in theory, up until you discover that it doesn't matter if you had a job or not.
Where are the jobs? Where are they?
yeah. It's like actually none of that matters. And we do the same thing. And so to move the noise out of the way, to begin to say, I'm going to look at these pieces. I'm going to track the underlying core fears and worries and trauma. I'm going to tend to that so that I'm able to completely be with myself as well as be with others. I can talk. So like I can talk about, let me think. I'm trying to think of I can talk about a system of oppression from a different nuance without diminishing or disqualifying myself in that conversation. Right. Mm-hmm. We've made it so that it seems almost the superior thing to be objective.
Right.
You know, like, oh no, I'm great. I'm objective. It's fine. It is fine. I am well. Thank you very much. Right. Like we do that. Like, I've mastered this like logical way of communicating into the world, but I've never dealt with the fact that I have OCD because generationally from family to family, it's run down as a way to control because there's, you know, root shit happening. And so again, when we're kind of peeling these layers back, it's also with the willingness of acknowledging the way survival has been normalized and privilege has been normalized under that. And that it is all an illusion because it's all the layers. It's an offering that actually nobody can cash the check of security.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Yeah.
That's because you're a poet. I've heard your poetry.
Thank you, Deborah.
Now, what was it again? Cash the check of security.
Yeah, nobody can do that.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
I mean, the concept is not beautiful, but the
right. But that's the thing, right? Like this.
Well, and I think that's the thing about trauma, right? Is that like there's a constant, like the thing about trauma. There's 50 things about trauma, but one thing that I feel like you're speaking to is like how there's a like a constantly running strive to get that security, to get that feeling of safety,
right?
And the patterns that have us striving for security look all sorts of different ways.
Right.
And some of those fit in with the dominant culture and have us perpetuating the dominant culture. And some of those ways of reaching for safety are completely like subversive, really,
right,
to the dominant culture. And so they stand out so we can see them. So they look bad, right?
Right.
Right. But the idea of trauma running in our body means that we're constantly trying to resolve the trauma, trying to like end the thing that happened so that we can actually find the ground again. And instead of being able to, when we're not identifying it as trauma, we don't know that we're just running this thing, trying to resolve that experience.
Right.
And we're just running. We're just constantly running, all of us, in different directions all the time.
Right.
When we can stop and be like, oh, this running thing that I'm doing, this is me running on the energy of trauma. And the trauma is always, I love this about the human experience. It's like the trauma always wants to be resolved. The human body always wants to heal.
Yes.
Like the second you cut your finger is the second the healing starts, you know, it's phenomenal. Yeah. And so that means that that trauma, the experience of trauma is, it's like, it's ready to be resolved. It's ready to be over. But we don't know that that's what it is. And so we're just trying to keep ahead of it rather than just actually making some space that's safe to let it move through us and resolve.
Right.
I think what you had said about sort of the individualization versus looking at the collective. You know, I mean, I never feel safe in a house. Like, and I have a history of trauma from a parent around being in a house. Mm-hmm. However, it's also, we, as Jews, we never felt safe. It was very hard to kind of feel settled. We were always moving.
Right.
So I have had that individual focus that, oh, it's because of what happened with my father versus, mm-hmm. oh, it's not only my father, but it's the history of my people in having to move all the time.
Right.
Yeah. And that was beautiful how you said that, Deborah, that it's not that it's not your father. Like that also is part of your lived experience. That's also in your body. But it's that compounded by however many generations of that anxiety of needing to move and that fear and terror of needing to move for safety.
Barry, you want to share? Did I say your name correctly?
Yeah, it's Barry. Thank you so much. Thank you to both of you. This is really wonderful, and I'm writing down all kinds of notes. I have a question. I've been working with another friend, colleague, on looking at your map, Joe, and looking at each section of the map, and we've been sort of trying to feel into it together to see what feels like kind of the antidote to a lot of the places on the map. And you spoke a little bit when you said that actually when we feel into our solidarity with other folks who are oppressed, that that's a way to find liberation. And I'm just curious if you can talk a little bit more about some of those specific places on the map. And, you know, is that something that you talk about in the workshops that you do of like, how do we find, of course, the first place is to feel into it, right? Of how we're actually experiencing the trauma and give it space for that and, you know, speak to the truth of that urge for security or whatever it is, or that need to flee when something frightening comes up. And then I'm also just curious of, is there a next step of where we can go after we've really felt into that place of, and now if I'm wanting to heal this part of myself, if I'm wanting to move forward, here are the steps towards that. Does this making sense?
Yeah, I mean, it's totally making sense. These are actually like some of my big questions right now as to how to support people to do that, like collectively. Because there's lots, I mean, there's lots of ways to do it individually. I'm a therapist and I'm an intuitive healer. So like I have some pockets full of different tools. But how do we do this in a way that it doesn't require you just going into your own trauma and kind of moving that through your body, which is ideally the way to do it. And, you know, on some levels, getting to really like, well, I'll speak to that for a second, which is like, in my mind, it's like, let's trace back to where some of those experiences were sourced. Like what actually happened? What happened to your family line? Some of that you know, some of that you don't know, some of that, right. Like what Deborah was saying, like what happened to my ancestors was already a culmination of what had happened to the previous six generations. And so, you know, some of those stories come up and we can remember them. Remember meaning like actually recall, but also remember meaning like kind of put them back together and see how they live in our body, like remember them, like the member, this being a member, you know? Yeah. Some of that to me is like, some of the resolving of that kind of trauma is making it more conscious. Because like I said before, I do believe that trauma just wants to be resolved. It just wants to be healed. And it makes me think actually about, yeah, an experience that I had like physically right next to you, maybe 2 years ago, and we were in a grief circle being held by some of our comrades. And I was, you and I both were just doing some holding, and yeah. I was like, okay, I'm going to try and go in for a second and just see what's there for me. And I kind of like dipped in emotionally and I started crying, which is kind of just what my body does to move energy. And I remember, I was having this image of being at summer camp, and I was like one of those white Jewish kids that got to go to a summer camp with lots of other white Jewish kids, which I didn't grow up around Jews. So this was like my home place in that way. But I would wake up every morning for years when I was at these summer camps, and I would cry. Mm. And I thought I was crying because I was sad that we had, like I had moved when I was 10. And this is like when I'm 13, 14, 15, 16, I'm still crying about that move. That's what I think. And you know, I'd cry and then everybody would wake up and I'd pretend I wasn't crying. Mm. I hadn't thought about that until this time, 2 years ago with Yah. And I'm in this circle, 2 years ago, I'm in this circle and I'm seeing this image of like one of my camp cabins, and I'm feeling the crying the way that I did then. And all of a sudden there's that image, and then it's kind of juxtaposed with this other image. And the other image was a remembering, a channeling that I'd recently done of my grandmother's mother, who I learned that she had like an enormous experience of grief in leaving Poland because she didn't want to leave her father's bones. Mm. And we know in Judaism there's something about honoring the land that your people are born in, and for her to leave her father's bones was leaving her father, who was beloved to her, but also it was actually like a disgrace. And she felt like just deep, deep sorrow and fear of what would happen if his grave wasn't tended to, his spirit wasn't tended to. Mm. So these two pieces came into focus for me. And what I understood in that moment, which felt really profound, was like I was waking up at summer camp, which was a place that I found safe enough to have these rememberings come to me. I was waking up crying with the grief of my great grandmother having left my great great grandfather's bones. And what happened in that moment for me was the resolve was like, oh, the awareness came and I no longer need to do that. It's complete.
Right.
Okay, so if everyone could have those experiences over and over again, like if we could have them ad nauseum for about a year, I think we'd be really good to go. Like white supremacy would really be better. That's not what I'm seeing is happening all the time, you know? And also like you can only take one of those big experiences, like let's say every few weeks at the most. It's like a lot. So it's a lot.
Isn't there a Jewish tradition? Someone told me about this, that every day for 20 minutes, you're supposed to put your head down on your arm and cry. I wrote it down somewhere about what it's called. Do I remember? Absolutely not. But you're supposed to every day cry for 20 minutes. And my sense is that if you did that, you would be grieving. You'd start with grieving your currently, But then you would start grieving your ancestors. Because if you did it every day for 20 minutes, you'd eventually finish your own stuff.
Yeah.
And would move on to your ancestors.
Right.
Yeah. But what is it called? I'm going to see if I can.
That is
I can't remember.
Well, one of the things that I, in a paper that I recently wrote for my area of subject, a study, was about the idea of, like, I was talking about Yom Kippur, and talking about Yom Kippur in the essence of how mind-blowing it is to have a ritual around personal and collective accountability. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy, like, it's like, I'm like, it's right there. Right. And like, there is this teaching from Pokalenu, who wrote the stages of decolonization, or kind of mapped it out along with a teacher of hers who was working on the island of Hawaii, and kind of having like, what are the cycles and the turns of this idea of decolonizing? And part, and what I fell in love with the most was, there's a part of this cycle or spiral that has mourning as part of the decolonization process.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Yes. Right. Yes. And that, to me, I can't help myself. I see things in, like, you know, in spaces. And so for me, if you can mourn and be supported in mourning, which is an outpour, then you're clearing out enough space to then move on to what would be the next thing in the cycle, which would be to dream. Right. And so for me, I'm like, wait, we need to have more conversations about grieving and mourning and what we are grieving and mourning. Because when we're unconsciously moving through that energy, it shows up in all types of freaking ways, in all types of different attachments, right? Because there's an undercore of something that has been, like, named or witnessed or said, actually, yes, I hear this experience when you're a child that shaped the way you became much more isolated and insular, rather than open and expansive, right? In community or in diverse communities. Right. And so to me, when we're looking at that and we're saying to ourselves, okay, I can be with this thing, I can be with that, and show up to do that work. And kind of back to what you were asking, Barry, the idea of what process looks like versus a very modern conditioned idea that if we just had a plan, it's gonna work out. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, oh, wait, you know, the outcomes, when we use that particular language, what is the outcome? Watch, what is the next steps? All this language kind of sets us back into this space of being like, we are a problem, a to-do list, a to-fix list.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? And so that's why so many people are burning, like, at this height now of this, so many are burning out. And they're burning out because there's no ritual, no process. Like, everybody wants a solution. The idea of solutionism is a colonial idea that we are all problems to be fixed. And those of us that can adapt and conform, we get the, you know, the little circles and the little smiley faces. Those that can't, you get a demerit. Like, if you were on my Facebook today or on my Instagram, when I was talking about my dentist and I asked what type of oppression was present, I said, you will get a demerit for saying shit like it's just protocol. You will get a demerit in my class just for saying that that's professional fill in the blank. You will get a demerit for continuously normalizing the bullshit. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. There's so many orientations that we need to shift that it becomes scary to shift them because, wait, aren't we supposed to have it all together? Aren't we supposed to be finished being healed? Aren't we supposed to be finished doing this work around this particular, you know, trauma cord? Like, are we done yet? And that idea doesn't allow us to be responsive in the moments. It actually puts us on an autopilot. So you're just waiting for the next thing that's going to help you actualize fill in the blank.
Yeah.
right? And so part of our decolonizing work, and part of like, and that's why there's a decolonization conversation for First Nation folks that are distinct and nuanced in the community, right? And that's important to acknowledge. It's a different conversation for Jews. It's a different conversation as a Puerto Rican Jew, mm-hmm. right? Like all the layers of the way these things show up to be able to name that there's a distinction is going to become really important, mm-hmm. right? Because that helps us again. It's like, if I'm going to learn something and I'm going to learn something under the premise or the idea that I like what you said earlier, you know, there's a promise. Mm-hmm. And the promise is that if I do it like this, or I react and respond like this, then I'm going to get the cookie.
Right.
And when there's that type of promise, you have just come outside of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
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 Which this work requires an right. honest.
Right. Like actually left yourself or abandoned yourself.
Yeah.
Looking out of you to get.
Yes.
That.
Yep.
And then we've left ourselves behind. So we can't necessarily regulate our systems to anyone else right. that we want to. We are not actually connecting. We're just going after that prize.
Right. And that the only way, some of the ways that can manifest, which I see a lot in my trainings, is the idea that when people, which I like reiterate 1,000 times, I'm really good at repeating myself. You know, homeschooling my kids just really impacted me so deeply. So really good. And so just really recognizing that in these spaces, what tends to happen is because belonging is such a core human thing, we get into these settings where we're talking about oppression and everybody's like, my boo-boo's bigger than yours. I have more scar tissue than you have. Actually, everybody in my family has scar tissue. So, you know, like I know suffering too. And that happens a lot in circles around, you know, trainings where folks are like processing. And the thing I have to reiterate is in that particular context, we're talking about racism. It doesn't diminish anything else, but there's a specific context to it, right? And so what tends to happen is that going, my boo-boo's bigger, has nothing to do with your fucking boo-boo. It has to do with your need to belong. And because that is so precarious in your life, the tendency is to leave yourself to go find it elsewhere or like over-identify. And those things don't allow us to actually step into the things that we need to do, right? Because they again, it's in like an outward motion. And we don't want to notice what's going on inside. Because if we do that, we have all this programming and conditioning around, right? That's what makes marketing sexy as fuck. It's good. I mean, they got the seconds and the minutes count down on like what the recycle pattern is going to be to send the message that by the end of the night, you're going to go make a run to McDonald's and get them chicken nuggets. Although your ass knows that them chicken nuggets ain't the real deal. But you're like, the commercial, I saw it like 5 times in a small amount of time, but we won't name that. And this is something we mentioned before, when we're afraid of what things mean to us, when we're afraid, we will really do some wild shit afraid. So what I'm trying to lace into all these pieces as we're talking is like, there's a distinction and a nuance between the map being a collective noticing, but primarily an individual noticing in order to get folks out of that individualized idea that this society is high on and into thinking about collective impact, right? Like that's where we're at. We're like, okay, and I do this, I watch. When I'm learning something, am I learning it for me or am I learning it to give it forward? Because if I'm busy using the part of my brain that needs to repeat that or teach that, I'm not necessarily using the part of my brain that's going, okay, where is this in showing up in my life?
Right.
Where is it showing up in my relationships? And right when I think I'm really savvy, and really smart and on, and I'm like, yeah, I got this down. Like, oh, this is what's happening. Let me do a little breathing exercise. The thing comes back and laughs at me. It's like, no, actually, we've shifted some. So now you need to you need to put in some new tools, right? Because what you're doing is you're unearthing all the ways your core belief systems and those imposed upon you have impacted the way you see the world and the way you see yourself. And you must be willing to first do that so that you can clearly understand when you're showing up in other contexts that it's no longer a competition of whose boo-boo's bigger, whether it's racism or anti-Semitism. It all fucking sucks. We are all in some way or another because the way the system has, it's a magnificent system. It's a brilliant thing when the people who created it have passed and it's still operating. Yeah. Right? Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And we will not be able to deconstruct shit unless we begin to have the honest conversations about how we've internalized all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes me, what you just said makes me think about, Barry, like your question about like, well, what do we do? We're exploring this, like we're thinking about these different parts and what do we do next? And I feel like there's a twofold that, yeah, you're speaking to too, about like, there's a waking up, a constant, like continuous waking up to the ways that my trauma is playing out in these particular patterns that turns out match all these different ways that all these people with similar trauma, similar history are playing it out, so that I can catch it, so I can see it, so I don't believe it, so I don't live by it, so I don't make choices from it.
Right.
And then the second part, which is like, and now what? And now what do I want to regulate my body to? What other way of being do I want to attune to so that it's safe for me to leave this pattern behind?
Yes.
Like it's safe for me to stop spinning because I know that there's another way to do it. And that way is like a softer landing, let's say. Yeah. Even just in the moment. And I think that that twofold is really important. So I'm going to spend time like investigating, like, how does this pattern show up in my life? And how can I just pay attention to it? And then how can I feel what happens in me? And what's underneath that? Let's take the moving fast one. Right. So I'm moving fast. My family moves fucking fast. My mom like shovels her food. It's like everything is so fast because we got to get it done because we're going to have to get out of here. Right. So what happens if I catch myself doing that? It's very uncomfortable. First of all, it's very humbling to catch myself in the practice of it because I don't want to believe that I'm doing that.
Right.
Somehow I'm better than that. Somehow I'm whiter than that, right? Gooder than that, purer than that, something healeder than that, which I'm not, human. So I'm going to catch myself and while I'm doing it, and then I'm going to drop myself down a little bit. What's underneath there?
Right.
Why do I have to move so fast? And this is not a question for my mind. This is a question for my body. What if I just stop for a second and slow down? And for me, what happens is I just start crying.
Yeah.
Because there's some energy that's fueling that pace.
Yes.
And if I can catch it with my mind and then feel it with my body, I can release the energy of that moment that connects to all these past moments and let it go. And then reattune. Oh, actually, I've got 25 minutes for this meal. I can lean back and go slow.
Right.
That is the repatterning that allows us to consciously choose what ideals, what systems, what culture we're actually choosing to be perpetuating, be participating in.
Right. Right. Beautiful.
Joe, I really appreciate, and then you brought it up again just now, this image of like, or the idea that when you, well, just thank you both, actually, I'm like writing furious notes. But the idea that when you stop to pay attention, you will just cry. Or like the way you described your experience like 2 years ago, you just were like, you went there intentionally. You like,
right.
You said, hold on, give me a moment. I'm going to actually go inside. Like knowing that you weren't and knowing how easy it was to like, or not easy, but how, you know, there was some conscious decision. Like we know how numb we are and we know like how to go in and out of it. And like the fact that as soon as we pause, like I've been having that same experience. Mm-hmm. Every time I slow down or I'm like in meditation, or I'm like asked a deep question, and take, it just takes one deep breath and I just actually think about it. And then I just start crying. I'm like, this is remarkable. Like, what if we felt everything? What if we always had been able to feel everything? Like, I don't know. I appreciate this conversation.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you. And I think that, like, you know, there's also a reason to not feel everything all the time, because we got to make it through some of the things we just got to make through. So there's something, I think, very powerful and potent and also precious about having those moments where it's safe enough, or you feel connected enough, or you feel belonging, like, yeah, you said enough, that you can actually let that healing happen, let that moment come, like let that energy or emotion release from your body. Like, there's something so powerful about the capacity that we have to create those moments and then like what you're saying, to take advantage of them, to like actually let the healing happen. Trusting that you're, and I think in there is like trusting that I'm not going to cry forever, which is scary, you know, cause there's this feeling of like, what if I start to look at it and I start to actually feel it and feel the depth of it and feel the generations of it. And then I'm lost there. And I think it is possible to get lost there. I think I've done it, you know, where like I'm just in it for hours, for days, for weeks. There's something about having in therapy, they call it titration. Like, I'm going to go in and then I'm going to come out, and then I'm going to go in again a little bit deeper, and then I'm going to come out for a little bit longer, and I'm going to steady myself, and I'm going to anchor myself on the shore, and then I'm going to go in again just a little bit, and then I'm going to come out. And to me, there's something about that that feels like it makes the healing doable. Because if it was on me to heal all the grief in the world, and for a little while, I kind of thought that it was, maybe I was like, that's what the chosen people meant. It was like, I'm part of the chosen one to heal the grief. Like, I'm just going to be miserable for months, for years on end, and feel like learning from one of my teachers that like, there's a river of grief that runs through generations, and we just have our part, and it's not in any of us to actually sit in the river and try to like bail ourselves out. It's a river. We're not like the buckets. It's actually not going to work that way. So how do you dip in enough to feel like, okay, there's something that I can feel that I'm sensing into, CK, like you're saying, like I'm feeling it right now. It's present enough. I'm actually going to like let it move through me, and then kind of come back up onto the shore and plant myself even more firmly. Again, like what I was saying, like of where I want to be planted, where I want to be oriented, who I want to be connected to, how I want to feel like I belong. And that every time I do dip into that grief a little bit more, or dip into, or release a little bit more from whatever pockets of grief or rage or terror, whatever it is that I'm carrying, that we're not doing it so that we can feel it. We're doing so that we can release that and realign ourselves more and more fully embodied in our bodies, in our sense of belonging, in our sense of connection, with my orientation clearer and clearer around solidarity, around connection.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. Barry, did I catch you had your hand up? Yeah.
I did. It was just a simple thing of thinking about, I'm just so blown away with everything that both of you have shared. I'm just so, so grateful. Thank you both so much. The concept of, you know, catching ourselves in these patterns, and I'm really curious about the process of being in community with other Jews, with specifically with other Ashkenazi Jews, and catching ourselves together and feeling into it together. And the power of that is something I really am wanting to explore, and moving it out of, yes, of course, I have to do my own individual work. Mm-hmm. How can we do that in community? How can we move ourselves forward in that? And then there was another piece of tapping into the grief. And you mentioned, Joe, when we can clear that out, then we can make room for something else. And I just wanted to point out too that it seems to me that there's a place of decolonization that we can tap into in ourselves, of reclaiming actually our joy, mm-hmm. and how powerful it is to reclaim, you know, what does our Jewish joy look like, right? And, you know, I just think about you know, the Ashkenazi lost language of Yiddish, and, you know, being able to be with one another and singing niguns and, you know, singing in Yiddish, and, you know, that that's actually really, really powerful. And for myself, I find that to be very liberating and healing as well. Those are just little tidbits I wanted to throw in there.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that there are these pieces. What I find is that the multiplicity of the complexity and also our multiplicity in a world that on a daily basis demands like a hierarchy and kind of like this disciplined way of holding things that are categorized gets in the way of being able to say that we can, like, all right, we want to declare spiritual war on something. I'm going to get my drum. I'm going to get my shofar. I'm going to be that person with all the things hanging on my book bag, right? Like, there are these tools, there are these ways, there are these practices long in place that are absolutely delicious and gorgeous. And like, we know how to do challah and we know how to get out the house. Right? We know how to celebrate the birth of a child, and we also know how to create community tight enough to cover that child. Like, there's all these ways that we can operate. We can actually be with grief and we can be with joy. We actually have that capacity, right? And so when we're talking about these pieces of healing and really the clarity around what the white construct has done, and also then also including in that conversation its oppressive and entitled and privileged way of moving in the world that is at the backs of other people in other communities. So I can be with that devastation, and I can be with the ways I've been devastated by that. And I can also be with what the practices of integration in order to be my most authentic self in this conversation, what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And I, like, we actually can hold that, right? Like on Pesach, we are, for crying out loud, we're eating horseradish. Awful for me, right? And so, awful. So we're doing horseradish, and then we're also doing like sweet things, where, you know, sprinkling the salt water, and we're also excited about the dessert we're gonna have, matzah made, right? Like, like, there, we know in our bones and in our DNA how to be with complexity without sacrificing it, because the sacrifice construct is right, is like the little baby from like capitalism and colonialism when they got together and made little babies. That's what it did, right? Like, it had all these little babies. And I think that's an important like reframe, because again, back to the idea of in my Sephardic lineage, the medicine in that place moving through my body and me being able to be in like, parallel relationship with it as I move in my generation is going to be one of the most powerful acts that we can ever do. Yeah. Right. And so like looking at this conversation from all the pieces, from the construct, from the place of responsibility, accountability between you and between our community, and really being willing to see ourselves inside of that and also bring the medicine with it. So we're like crying over the drums. Mm. That wouldn't be a new thing, mm-hmm. right? We would be, and this is what we do together. And wherever we cannot meet, wherever we can't do that thing that we love to do, where it's like we generalize or neutralize everything so we can feel like we're one, we do that thing. Like, we can also be with the ways that we are not one. And that's what, you know, like I wanted to create a meme the other day. It's not my fault that you don't know what Judaism or Jews are. Like, I'm not responsible for you not knowing that there's more than Ashkenazi Jews. I want to support and encourage you to do your work.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we can't do that we need to be able to be in a relationship with the accountability so that we can show up to bring the medicine. Right. And so like in this space of this conversation, being able to say that what we're going to do is we are going to consciously commit to seeing the ways that our movement as a people has decolonial essences built in with the most greatest wisdom before we could even say a thing, right? Like we know what it is to pile stones on the ground so that we can remember. We know what it is to create meals that feed our communities. We know what it is to shift these dynamics. It's in it. It's built in it. And so part of teshuvah in this, part of this return is saying, are you willing to understand that, yes, whiteness is a construct that was easy to kind of, but not easy, because those are mirages. They're illusions that are set that, oh, it looks like it was a great idea. It wasn't a great idea at all, right? But like when we do that thing, to be able to say to ourselves, okay, these are the ways that we're going to hold this energy and move it. These are the ways we're going to shift the way our community is showing up. These are the ways that we're going to stop normalizing, whether it's through like saying you have OCD or saying you're neurotic. Mm-hmm. Like we're going to deconstruct that, because actually you're traumatized. Right. And it's almost unbearable to name the fact that you are traumatized. Right. In a world that wants you to be able, body, mind, and you know, spirit type of thing. Yep. Like, no, you can't ever say that you've been through a thing.
Yep.
Absolutely not. I've been through a thing. I'm on the other side of that, but I don't know the next time I'm going to have a little reminder. I don't know. Right. The best thing that we can do is actually show up for that integration.
Yeah.
Right. And I trust that we are able to step into that so that we're not lost in the splicing of saying, we understand there's white supremacy construct that I tend to fit in. So I don't need to feel guilty about that. It's a construct that was created. I need to figure out where I'm perpetuating that.
Right.
In order to enact liberatory, conscious decolonization that can survive generations to come.
Right.
Right.
Where am I perpetuating that? And also what are the places of trauma that I carry inside of me that allow me to not see
right.
The way that I'm perpetuating that.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so the intersections of this conversation in terms of decolonial praxis is about saying to ourselves, and I love this because when I'm holding space, I'm often holding space from a decolonial deconstructing type of mindset. So I'm always fucking it all up. And for some people it's the most unpleasant thing in the universe, right? And then I'm like, and then I remind folks, like the process that we're going through is the process.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Like I don't have secret sauce. We're in the process. This is the process, right?
You have secret sauce. You do have secret sauce.
No, but you know, you right? Like
yeah.
We look at it and we're like, wait, why is this aspect of our humanity so shameful?
Right.
Why is talking about this? Why is holding the tension? Why is it a thing to, to be the generation in your family to reclaim your ancestry in that way that you would even use this? This is where it's at. We will not operate in shame or guilt because those things create a paralysis.
Right.
And what we're trying to do and for me, what a lot of the work that you're doing, Joe, is about that. It's about creating a container to activate a deparalysis, right? Like to initiate movement and awareness around the multiplicity of whiteness in America and then those that have fit into that construct so easily.
Right.
Right. And so it's like, if we can begin to just begin, it's just the beginning. To be able to look at yourself and look at community. And for the kind of the flip side of this is like for Jews of color who are having a remembering, not like, I can't even tell you how many folks I've spoken to who are reclaiming their Jewishness, mm-hmm. who want to do all the right things, but do not yet understand that what they're considering right is just Ashkenazic, like customs.
Right.
And that there's customs that their lineage have moved right through the system, and they feel shame about that. And then to show up in community is not as easy
right.
as one would think, right? Like some people can be asked forever, are they converts? And it's really fascinating to me because there's actually halakha around like not telling a convert they're a convert. There's actually law that that's not to be mentioned. You don't throw it in anybody's face, which is really interesting. Some people say they have children in love, you know, like the extra children, the stepchildren, and they don't refer to them as that because they're part of the family.
Right.
Right. And so for me, a lot of this conversation coming from a JOC perspective is really about the permission for those who need it cognitively, the permission to own a Judaism and a Jewishness that you understand you don't have to take it on. You are actually part of it. You are actually it.
Yes. Yes.
Right. And this is what happened with the part one. Part one was like this conversation of, wait, what would a Judaism that fits you look like?
Mm.
Well, right. We could come up with the answers, but at the end of the day, it looks like exactly what I am.
Right.
Right. Like I am that intersection. I live there.
Yeah.
And so being able to be with that is to me is like this great ass medicine where it's like, oh, right. And when we do that, when we build this capacity to have this conversation, it becomes less about the big boo-boo. It becomes less about guilt. It becomes less about that. And it becomes more about, we know what it's going to take to move past the survival into a thriving generative space. And that's the thing that we can do as a community. And doing that as a community means being able to sit with the tension of the difference, and difference not meaning division, that allows all Jews from all places, all colors, all the things,
right.
be integrated into saying, we are here on this turtle island and we're going to fuck shit up.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're going to fuck it up. We're going to fuck it up because that's what we do. We bring our drums and we fuck it up and we blow the shofar so that your dogs bark because they don't understand what's happening, right? Like, this is what we do. You want to know how we roll? We know how to walk a wall for a long time, right? Like, all the oral stories and all the narratives that we have are actually rich in telling us that when we are in direct relationship with this shit, there's powerful things can happen. Because you're not only collectively witnessing, you're self-witnessing, and most trauma is asking to be witnessed. Mm. And just in the same way you said, is asking to be cleared.
Yeah.
It's like, can you notice that the reason why every person in your family does fill in the blank has to do with this thing? And nobody has stopped to go, oh, wait, we've done this because of this. Let me look at the pain. I'm going to move through the mourning ritual. I will sit Shiva for this thing because we have the tools to do that. Like, we have amazing tools to actually move through things and to include our relationship with our earth relative, to include our relationship with our plant relatives, rock, like, we have a blessing for everything. And at this point in life, I'm like, no, I have the app. Don't ask me to remember. That's not happening. Right. And then I'm also like trying to figure out what's the shortest blessing and the quickest that covers it all. You can't ask for anything more brilliant, right? To find yourself home in yourself because you are home, and that home is connected to an ancient thread. And that white Jews absolutely have a responsibility, the ability to respond, because there's an access that's been granted because of the color of your skin to disturb, to disrupt, to deconstruct, to dismantle the very systems of oppression that exist.
Yes.
Right? And like when we're doing that, that to me is like, this is so good, I want to smoke a cigar for joy. I want to like smoke a cigar for joy. And what I want the most the reason why this these classes are the way they are is because I don't have an interest in the showing of like how beautiful can this thing be. It's beautiful because we're all here witnessing each other in a story. I'm not an expert. I know, Joe, you don't stand in the space of an expert either. We're people with experiences willing to hold space for the complexity of a conversation that cannot give you a checklist at the end of the training. And that allows for the space of you learning to be with your environment and your ecology and to begin to analyze and assess the way that you are operating. Is it truly liberatory? Mm-hmm. You know, so as folks rise up to fight for the rights of others, is your ass free? Mm-hmm. And freedom as a verb, liberation as a verb, mm-hmm. right? Like, are you in that? And my personal experience being in it is not glamorous. I don't even take IG pictures of when I'm in it. Because sometimes I think I forget to brush my teeth that day because I'm so in it, right? Like the shifts or the integration will not be televised because it will be for all our days that we are working through this and holding each other through this and holding accountability and noticing that your obsession with one thing is actually a colonial construct, that this professional thing that you thought was an ethic actually is not an ethic. It's a contract to create, right, a space between you and another human being, mm-hmm. right? And so like decolonizing the path, and it's funny because the other day I was wondering, I'm like, oh, does the topics that I'm talking about sound like I'm trying to offer Judaism as like some sort of thing, right? Like some sort of like answer to a thing. No, what I'm trying to remind all communities of, no matter who I'm teaching or where I'm at, is that your community has medicine. Right? Your community has medicine. Stop going outside. It's inside. Mm-hmm. And you're going to need the trust. And this is something like when you were talking about being able to do that thing, you're talking about a really deep sense of trusting. Mm-hmm. That you'll know when to press through, you'll know when to pull back. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you're experiencing cognitive dissonance and you get that, it's like an airplane. I call it airplane mode in the head. Because mm-hmm. That's what you feel like, because you can't really like think. Yeah. That's clear. And you're like still holding. It feels like what, you know, in a computer when the thing is going round and round because it's loading. Yeah. That's what cognitive dissonance looks like. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and most people are like, I don't even know what to think or say. Be with. What do we do now? I like to shift that to, who do we be now? Mm. Because doing, you could give an offering and get your name put on a plate in a building, which looks sexy, I guess. Like, you could do that thing, but what do you look like actually liberating yourself and being in that relationship with that? What do you look like when you're in organizations and places where the anti-Semitism is not only heightened and as it is internalized, but that it is also combined with racism, sexism, and ableism and becomes a storm? Like, where are you? Can you disrupt that? How much does that protect you?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
Right? Like, how much does it protect you that you're willing to step into kind of releasing that faux protection, not only for the community, but for yourself as well? Yeah. Right? And so I feel like when we're doing this, like right now, the fact that we're doing this, we are actually disrupting, right? Where we're naming for ourselves the ways that whiteness, it's like a broad stroke, it's an awful thing, would love to wash away with everybody, is not discriminating in its agenda either. And so when you take the construct and you begin to make that your personal identity, we're in trouble. Mm-hmm. It makes it difficult to be an ally or a co-conspirator because you have stock in that oppression bank account.
And in the promise.
Yeah.
The promise. It's not actually a place to land.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's almost like that whole carrot negotiation, right? Like if you keep the carrot in front, they'll keep on moving and they'll do that thing, right? Like it's like that shit pisses me off. But even more so harder to acknowledge that you've been after the carrot, to grieve the ways you've had to give yourself up, give your community up, change your name, not look so fill in the blank, straighten your hair if that's necessary, right? Like the layers.
Yeah.
Right. And when we name this and bring it to the surface and understand it, it becomes much more possible to be and get a nose job. Yes, this is true. when we move through this, we get to be in much more relationship with all the things that are going on in our country. Right. Because we're not like trying to blindside ourselves in order to do good work in the world. We actually know as an individual what it means to have to do that thing, pull that stuff off and shed it. It's painful. It can be agonizing. It can take you out for weeks of fatigue because you're moving big things and you're letting go of big things. Because contrary to the you think you know, you actually don't know, and it's really uncomfortable. So mystery becomes really uncomfortable. Can you imagine walking the desert for 40 years? I'm just saying, we know how to do it. Oh, we know how to go around a thing. We know how to get lost. And even once you get out to no longer be identified with the pain. Mm-hmm. And because the pain was inflicted, it is interesting that we feel that our identification would be shameful, mm-hmm. or our identity would mean something less than who we are and what we are. Wonderful. Thank you. It was great having you. I'll send the recording after. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barry. Yeah. Thank you. This was so powerful. I mean, I've been doing a lot of this work and actually did a group with Jewish women talking about internalized anti-Semitism and how we put so much focus on doing Black anti-racism work and not anti-Semitism. So this is really good. So.
Yeah. And I think there's also a space to say it would be really powerful and helpful. I mean, that we are able to have capacity to hold for both of the things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. And be able to say, we're going to show up and do this thing. And we're going to do it because we know of it. And we're also going to take it deeper to get free for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Right. And that advocating for Black Lives Mattering is not some sort of side thing, some sort of check the box, I'm a good Jew thing. But it's like naming I support that, but I also actively decolonize and decentralize whiteness in everything that I do.
Yeah. I'm certainly going to listen to this again. for me, in some ways it's new language, it is new language. So, and I'm in spaces where I need the new language. And I feel like listening to the two of you, I was scribbling things down. It's like, okay, I can't write fast enough.
Yeah. Right. That's why I do the recording. Cause I'm like, it's solely on that. I understand trying to be present in this space and trying to get down to stuff. It only works like if you could listen to it after, and then you're like, oh my gosh, it was there all along. So that's why the recording exists. Joe, I don't know if you want to say something. We are definitely over time, that's why I wrote ish.
I know.
I wrote ish.
I just feel like this is, there are like so many so many layers here. You just like opened the Torah and started reading there. Yeah, that was like just what you just did. There's so many like connect the dot pieces. I think that there's like four things I want to say, but I'll pick one because we have to close. I think I just want to speak really briefly to the piece you said about Jews of color feeling like not belonging, especially those like kind of uncovering legacies of Judaism that have not been practiced and have been, for survival's sake, have been buried and are being unearthed, and like the potency of that and the power of that, and like what it means for someone who's just discovering that to step into a space that's a Jewish space that is primarily a white Jewish space, primarily a white space, and feeling like all of the layers of not belonging, all of the layers of not being held there and seen there. And I think that there's just a really necessary role that we white Jews have to play in that, in those moments and in that, those scenarios, which is really to take a look at the way that we have internalized the trauma, not just the traumas of anti-Semitism, but the experience of assimilation and what we gave up, however consciously, and the impact and the imprint of that, because the giving up, we didn't just give up the language or give up the culture or give up the physical way of shaping our bodies, the way of interacting. Yes. We took on the whiteness. We embody the whiteness and we inhabit the whiteness. Mm. And I'm thinking specifically about what I've learned from this newly formed collective that's post-Soviet queer young adults who just have been coming together and sharing their experiences and sharing their stories. And many of those folks, or all of those folks, came over from Ukraine, from Belarus, from post-Soviet countries to, because like there's lots of history there, but came as young children, came as babies, and they're in their mid 20s to mid 30s now, and they're seen as white and they're Ashkenazi Jews, and so I would decide that they're just one of me and not even consider the fact that they might have a completely different experience.
Right.
And what I've learned about that is that the fact that I didn't even know that this group was amongst my crew, the fact that that so many folks have been silent about not thinking of themselves in the same way, not having the same experience, having all the Jews that came over that are white already be assimilated, already be white before they even arrived on the scene. So them feeling like they're the deep outsider, speaking Russian, eating food that me and my, say like my mom would already decide like, oh, that's smelly, even though her fucking grandmother ate those foods.
Right.
I know that because we're doing the assimilation project, Right. So I'm saying this because there's a way that, there's something really important and potent about me kind of tuning into what was lost in that assimilation process, the connections that were lost, the memories that were lost, the sense of place that was lost, the sense of peoplehood, the sense of belonging, the way of being that was lost, all of the plant medicine, all of the craft, all of the witchcraft, all of the spells, like all of that being lost. And there's literally a replacement, and that replacement is white culture. And I need to own that part. Even if I didn't choose that part, I need to own that part, because that is a way that I orient unconsciously that recreates the very sense of not belonging, the very sense of being pushed out, the very sense of not being safe that is then experienced like by you, yeah, or by any other Jews of color who are like entering this space being like, I fucking belong here, and here I am, and I've like worked to get here, and this is my, you are my people, and this is my Judaism, and like, are you kidding me? This space is white too? Well, where am I supposed to go then? How am I supposed to do this? And I feel like there's something that's very important about being in comradeship in undoing this, because there's no part of me that wants to be recreating something that my ancestors survived or something that you're interfacing with. I don't want to be part of that, but I really am. And I really need to own that. And we, as white Jews, really need to own our, like you say, response and our responsibility to be noticing that and naming that and uprooting that so that we can be finding ourselves, finding the belonging within ourselves that was taken away by that process of assimilation. So that we can actually like open our bodies to see that we don't have to be close to people that don't look like us because we were disallowed from being connected to people that didn't look like us. Like we're recreating the same trauma and we don't need to do that. We have to not do that if we're actually going to be moving towards something that's truly liberatory. So what does it look like to collectively, to individually and collectively be able to notice it and name it and be like, hey, you all, we're doing that thing. Let's stop. Let's just stop and let's feel what we're doing and let's feel what's beneath that and let's let those layers move through us. And then let's reorient and re-anchor ourselves in a way that allows more space and more spaciousness and more belonging and more connection.
Yes.
So I'm going to have to like take exact quotes from you. Because I'm actually doing, you know, Harriet Wims.
Yes.
Oh, so yeah.
She is, we're doing, do you know playback?
Yeah.
So we're doing a playback performance on what Jews of color want white-skinned Jews to know.
Mm. Wow.
So on November 14th, she's doing this whole series, but we're doing this one piece and I'm conducting it. And so I'm literally going to take like exact quotes and I will identify having been with the two of you around those quotes. This was incredibly powerful and I've done a lot of work, but this is so deep. This is such deep work. And I'm going to have to take snippets because, this is so deep that I'm not going to be able to transmit it the way of what's happened here tonight. So, and I hope it's okay. I want to share this with Harriet. I want her to see this.
Yeah.
I'm speechless. That's what I can say is I'm speechless. So a well of tears, like, thank you. You've articulated something so powerful that the white Ashkenazi Jewish community needs to do this work. It needs to do this work so that we are able to open our arms fully to the full Jewish community. And for everyone to feel have a place at the table. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing. I wasn't even gonna come.
Well, we're glad you made it.
This was so powerful.
Thank you so much.
So thank you.
Beautiful. I'm looking at the chat box. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, it's our pleasure, really. I feel like one of the things that was so exciting to me is the fact that this is what it would be like if you were with Joe and I in a space. We'd be sitting, talking about these things, needing to get some snacks. And I'd be tempted to smoke a cigar. But you know, like this is what it would look like. It's no different when we're together and holding a space. And so I'm so glad that it was nourishing and that it's medicine. And thank you for showing up. Thank you for coming. You'll definitely, I need to wait for the recording to process and then I'll send it out to everyone. And then if you have any questions, Joe, where would you want folks to reach out to you at? If they want to know more about
Well, Yeah. So the map, which we can put the address in again, that is a free resource. So you can download it for free. You can please share it. And that, all right, it's transcendingjewishtrauma.com. And then my website, joekentkatz.com, and that's the best place to reach me directly. And I just want to put a plug in for Deborah, for like your whole playback crew, to just keep tapping into what Yah is putting out, because she's the resource out of this human here is immense. I want her inbox, I want her bank account, I want her website to be packed with people.
Honestly, so I can't believe more people are here.
I know.
What is that about? You know, I am dumbfounded by it. And now that I was here, I'm even more dumbfounded by it.
Well, in all fairness, our world is quite upside down, and social media, like if you're going to know, you're going to know it through social media. And if it's moving at the speed that it moves, it's very hard. The best thing is like to show it, share it like with the people you know and things like that, because that's the best way it's going to get around, because we're overwhelmed. So that, and whoever looked at it and went, no thanks, it's perfectly fine. You know, we all we all in some way or another are learning to be with complexity. Some folks are at a place where they can open more to that, and some folks are not, because they have so much attached to it, and trying to keep that, you know, faux safety. So you're welcome to share, you know, and I trust that our showing up, whether however many people or two people, to me, it's still the same in terms of just putting these conversations out there. And so thank you both. Well, thank you all that showed up, and thank you so much for being here. And Joe, you know, I fucking love you. So it was magnificent. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to chat and bring this powerful medicine. And I look forward to our showing up and having more of these delicious conversations. So good. I love you so much, and I'm so thankful. Thank you. Yeah. And if you
love this.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. So be sure to get the, again, but you can find the, I think, Joe, I have your website also on the stuff. So either way, I'll send it out with the recording just in case, so folks can tap into that and enjoy it. So just a deep breath to close. Oh, thank you, ancestors, relatives, all beautiful beings that were present with us and have held us to this moment to speak these immensely sexy incantations of liberation that bring us back home to ourselves and our communities and all the communities of the world. So grateful for time and place and space, and so grateful for what's been channeled, may continue to show up in the world vibrationally in ways that are empowering and affirming. And may it be so. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Joe, I don't know. You're welcome, Deborah. It was absolutely such a pleasure.
It's Deborah, actually.
You know what? Thank you for that correction. That's what it looks like. That's what it looks like, Deborah. Okay, Sharon already left. But so, yeah, thank you so much. And Joe, I don't know if you want to chill for a minute.
Bye.
Thank you, Deborah.
Bye.